Welcome back to another episode of Morning Coffee. My name is Rick Alexander. You guys can follow me at Rick Alexander _ on Instagram if you want to follow on, talk about the show, debate some of my topics as we talked about a little bit in earlier week's episode, and also just connect. I love to know who is listening to the show and if you're getting any value out of it. You know, right now we are in a time where there's certainly lots of confusion, certainly lots of chaos, certainly lots of fear. And sometimes when you're amidst destruction, if you look in the wrong place, you can begin to lose track of the inherent sanctity and awe in life and the mystery and what's worth exploring and what's worth focusing on. And so I wanted to write a piece about that. I've always been intrigued by the idea that we wish on a star. It's like a weird thing. Like, where did that come from? And so I kind of take a crack at it in this piece. And I talk pretty deeply about experiences that I've had where I've kind of fallen away from, I've lost a lot of the mystery and reverence I had for life as well, and kind of how I found my way back to it. And so this piece is called When Stars Die, and we're just kind of talking about rediscovering the inherent mystery and awe in life. Why is it that when we see a star die and fall from the sky, something deep within us knows that we should see it as a moment of hope? When one of these billion-year-old balls of fire finally runs out of fuel and arcs across the night sky, we're taught from a young age that it's a moment to stop, reflect, and make a wish for the future. Part of this phenomenon stems from the fact that we aren't emotionally attached to anything that doesn't appear to affect our small world, and so in some sense, we're actually free to admire it in the first place. What you'll notice if you're paying attention is that our negative reactions to something dying tend to stem from its proximity to our heart, not from the actual event taking place. The closer something gets to affecting us, the more we feel inclined to form a negative judgment about that thing. When a human life is recycled into the cosmos, for example, we feel it viscerally. The closer that human was to our heart, the more grief and pain we feel. I know certainly there are people being affected by this in some way and feeling that grief and pain. Our objectivity to the event of a dying star allows us to see what is actually going on, and we're free to admire nature as it goes through its process. Part of our inherent awe is because of the matter of chance. Relatively speaking, we don't spend a lot of time here existing in our personality structure as compared to the time that stars burn in the sky. And so if we happen to look up at the very moment that something which has existed for more times than our small minds can even comprehend happens to die, we celebrate the overcoming of odds. Most of us aren't aware of all of this, of course, but the very fact that such a ritual is embedded within us says more about the human race than most realize. This hints at the ultimate meaning of why we're here. We play the role of witness to the awe of an infinitely complex universe. When people argue about whether or not a tree that falls in the woods makes any sound, part of what they're arguing about is whether or not it actually matters. Without life as a witness to the incredible unfolding of creation, what meaning would there be? For such a thing to exist without a witness would, by definition, take away its meaning. This, because meaning is only a reflection of a value system, and so a universe without a witness with an intact value system would, in fact, render it meaningless. We are the witness that not only adds meaning to the universe itself, but we've continuously overcome staggering odds to do so. Don't allow the philosophical significance of this to overshadow its literal importance. The odds of you being the human that beat the other sperm to the egg is something like 4 trillion to 1, and once you arrive, it turns out that your being here is the key to meaning itself. If more people understood that life is a combination of unfathomable odds and abstract values, perhaps we would also understand that meaning, therefore, technically can't be found in the material world alone, but in the unfolding of the experience that occurs within it. So many of us try to earn enough, to amass enough, to give our life significance, but that is to look in the wrong place altogether. The importance of the awe, curiosity, and hope we naturally find in the moment that we wish upon a star runs deeper still. We found that from our most basic level, it is only the dying of the star that makes our life possible in the first place. It not only hints at the meaning of our life, it also is responsible for life itself. Our most basic material is found to be the remnants of such explosions. Roughly 60% of our constituent atoms are hydrogen and helium, left over from the explosion that carved space and time out of the deep void of eternity some 13.7 billion years ago. The other 40% resulted from supernova explosions that occurred around 5 billion years ago. When the center of a star collapses in on itself, the resulting explosion forms a black hole as its remnants are sent to the far corners of the galaxy where they will become new stars and perhaps other forms of life. This, of course, is where our story begins. This is also why all of the universe appears to be a reflection of itself. It quite literally is. The black hole that is left is such a gravitational pull that even light can't escape its grasp. This is the paradox that life presents us with. In our world, which has its outer parameters defined by time and space, destruction is a necessity. It's only when things collapse that we make room for something new to exist, and thus we see the basic rhythm that underlies all of creation in its continuous cycle of death and rebirth, as something emerges for a span of time before collapsing in on itself again. Through our lens, when it occurs close to our heart, acts of destruction are heart-wrenching, awful, and even unforgivable. From a higher perspective, we see such acts of destruction as the core of divinity itself, an act of love that creates the space for the emergence of new beauty to come into being. Certain mystical practices have sought to put themselves in concert with this cycle, such as we see with the Zen garden. The basic idea being that people, you've probably seen monks do this, they create something of intricate beauty out of sand, only to wipe it away and begin anew once it is finished. In modern times, we feel a considerable amount of pain as we tend to attach ourselves emotionally to what we create or what we see has been created during our particular span of time. Our call to play our role in the unfolding of creation is not to detach completely from such things, as our appreciation of them is integral to their meaning in the first place. Our call is to navigate the unfolding of experience with grace and poise so that we might learn, love, and play our part in evolving it all for those that we pass it on to. In other words, we're not here to escape this life or bypass what we feel, as compelling as that tendency might be. We also aren't here to hold on so tightly to what has been that we lose track of the beauty that's often created after great collapse. We're something else, something that's called to hold the tension between these two stories. As humans, this puts us continuously at the crossroads of triumph and heartbreak. We not only give such stories their meaning to begin with, but we also keep a record of them so whoever comes next might be able to stand on our shoulders and ensure that it all keeps building off of itself in a positive direction. We honor people like Martin Luther King Jr. once every year because he served as the ultimate example of what we are. He held the tension between stories with love, and he had the courage to demand a better one for the next generation. We are here to emerge from the darkness of collapse and continuously refocus the narrative. If we do so rightly, we see that we play a pivotal role in the direction of the universe, not by controlling it all, but by ascending to higher levels of consciousness so that all of the necessary destruction becomes worth it. We add purpose to the pain. We exist at the tip of the evolutionary spear for this reason. When things collapse and destruction is evident, if we focus on the collapse, it is likely that we see nothing but darkness. It's likely that the pull is so strong in the black hole that even light gets pulled into it. In our lives, we see this often when people lose their faith in being itself on the other end of a great collapse. I learned this lesson personally, in all of its pain, at 22 years old. See, I was raised with immense faith as a Christian, and for all of the confusion this caused me as I had to pull apart religion and logic, it also gave me a deep love and immense joy for my life that I'd be remiss not to recognize. When my best friend was killed in Iraq, though, I couldn't look away. I stayed in the darkness until all of the reverence I had was pulled out and began a 10-year period of oscillating back and forth between nihilism and cynicism. I would eventually come to understand that this period of my life was necessary. See, my faith wasn't built on a solid foundation, and as a result, it was nothing to what it could be. I personally needed destruction to make room for new beauty to emerge. The optional part was staying in the darkness for so long. Lots of us are in this place, standing in the center of a great collapse and wondering what the hell the whole thing is for. We often don't emerge because we don't let ourselves. We're afraid to be happy for long periods of time following devastation because on some level, it feels as though we're not honoring what has been if we move on. On another level, we often feel that we're justifying the tragedy that we've had to go through. This happens because in our pain, we reduce life to an either-or scenario, when in reality, the complexities of our world demand a both-and conjunction for a better understanding. Our refocusing of a narrative never undermines what has come, because that would be impossible. We exist at the very end of an unbroken chain of life for billions of years. It survived disaster, otherworldly impact, and brutally harsh conditions. It keeps going, and so we keep going. And the very fact that we do is a testament to all that's come before. For this same reason, we often see that conservatively minded people reject progress because it seems to undermine what has been, even what's worked. Again, this is rarely the case. Part of the lesson that's emerged over billions of years is that progress won't be stopped, no matter what we do. We are instead presented with a choice of how we want to hold this tension. For this reason, what we do becomes vastly less important than how we do it. Love is going to continue to evolve itself with or without our participation. We find that if we align with it, we can enable the emergence of love and new beauty, such as people like Dr. King did. When we stand in opposition to it, we're part of the wreckage that will be forgotten. You see this now with the tearing down of Confederate statues in the United States. You know, in our nearsightedness and our attachment, we lose focus on the whole picture. The job of revolutionaries throughout history has been to refocus the narrative, to pull their heads out of the duality and ask what else might be true. This is why almost every given truth we have today was once a revolutionary's dying claim. They enable the masses to move into the next evolution of existence, and as the masses oppose them, their service to creation is often paid for with their own. And so the reason I wanted to talk about this again is because we are going through so many changes right now, and it's easy to become myopic to the pain and the darkness and the things that don't work out. It's easy to forget that in the end, love essentially always wins. And I think our greatest, you know, our greatest calling as human beings is to align ourselves with what always wins and facilitate the co-creation of that world with each other. Because all of our actions, all of our thoughts, all of our habits, we're always creating the world that not only we live in, but everyone that comes downstream from us also lives in. So I think it might be the most important thing that we ever do. Anyway, I love you. Hope you have an amazing Wednesday, and we'll talk later on Morning Coffee. We'll be right back.